Hello and welcome to the latest Brewing podcast. Today we talk the pound and particularly in relation to Brexit on a day that it appears as though the Cabinet have arrived at a strategy to take forward the Brexit negotiations with the European Union. Here's just a short clip from our guest, Guy Foster, Head of Research, on what the consequences might be for domestic politics.
The European Research Group won't like this deal, and they've easily got enough members to trigger a confidence vote in the Prime Minister.
Okay, so does that mean a leadership challenge is imminent? We'll tell you more on this if you keep listening, but first, here are our disclaimers.
The value of investments can fall and you may get back less than you invested. Past performance is not a reliable guide to future performance. The podcast is not intended as investment advice. No investment is suitable in all cases. We or a connected party may have an interest in the securities mentioned or may act as principal or agent in those securities from time to time. The podcast content comes from diverse sources whose accuracy cannot be assured. The opinions expressed in this publication are not necessarily held throughout Brewin Dolphin. Investment in currencies other than your own means changes in the exchange rate will cause the value of your investment to move independently of the underlying asset.
Hello everyone and welcome to the latest Brewin podcast. I'm Ben Guttridge, Head of Fund Research, and today I'm joined by the Head of Research at Brewin Dolphin, Guy Foster. And today's subject matter is going to focus on Brexit-related matters in the context of a pound that is up. And I know the story is one that moves very fast, but we do seem to have taken some strides, or the Cabinet does seem to have taken some strides in terms of nailing down a strategy. So we're going to look at that, see how that may unfold in the context of the eyes of the EU, but also in domestic politics, and then think about whether, in fact, there could be some rather worrying fallouts in terms of perhaps a general election. And all of that combined, we're going to round out with thinking about how that is going to impact our investment thinking and our investment views. Guy, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sparing the time. I know how busy you are doing reviews with me and such like that. We have had some news, or it's seemingly some news, about the Cabinet arriving at a solution that they're going to take to the EU in terms of negotiations. But let's start with the core arguments. What were the different elements of the Cabinet arguing for in terms of maximum facilitation and this customs partnerships?
Well, you have to go quite some way back to the previous agreement which the government reached with the EU, which enabled them to move on to the next stage of negotiations. And in that, there was a backstop arrangement, what's called a backstop arrangement, to deal with the thorny issue of where, if anywhere, a border should appear on either side of Northern Ireland and the rest of the EU. And everyone, I think, knew at the time, and everyone will have been on record saying, this doesn't really seem to have been resolved. But it was resolved in the sense that if nothing better shows up, then what will happen is that effectively Ireland would sort of remain in the customs union and the rest of the UK would remain out of the customs union. So the border would be drawn, you know, more effectively, really, across the Irish Sea rather than where Ireland, where Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland actually meet. And that is a solution which is not acceptable to people, to unionists, and most obviously to the Ulster Union, to the DUP, because it seems to effectively separate one part of the UK from the rest of the UK. So that's what all of the negotiation within the Cabinet has been around for these last few weeks. And they've had these two options. One of them is nicknamed NCP, which stands for
National Car Parks.
National Car Parks. No, it stands for New Customs Partnership. And that was the Prime Minister's preferred option. The other one is nicknamed MaxFac, which stands for
A type of makeup that I'm currently enjoying.
Exactly. Yes. Maximum facilitation. And so NCP worked on the basis that goods coming into the UK to ultimately go into the EU, the UK would collect the EU's tariffs on that, and it might have its own tariff rates, but it would establish what tariff needed to be collected. It would pass on the part to the EU that was that related to, say, the common external tariff or whatever the related arrangement was. But then UK goods would be able would be effectively determined by whatever specific arrangement the UK and the EU had reached. So that was NCP. It's not ever been done before, and the idea that it would that the EU would be outsourcing its tariff collection was considered controversial by many people and crazy by the foreign secretary, and so that that had lots of objections to it. Then there's Max Fack. So this is also described as a highly streamlined customs arrangement. And what that effectively means is that there are all sorts of provisions to enable the border to be a hard border between Northern Ireland and the rest of Ireland, but the softest possible kind of hard border, in that, so the Prime Minister said that small traders would just be able to cross it in the way that they can do at the moment. And there would be a trusted traders scheme to enable other forms of business to operate across the border. There would be a waiver on entry and exit declarations. There'd be all sorts of these things. And particularly, you would have goods flowing from the UK to the rest of the world through the EU. That wouldn't have to pay EU duty because it was effectively it's supposed to be a UK export or something to a non-EU jurisdiction. And this all hinged a lot on technology, that there would be appropriate technology put in place to track different types of goods and crossings of the border.
Technology that hasn't yet been determined to be of sufficient quality.
It was one of the major complaints, I think. I mean, and then there were a series of complaints that those arguing for either of these options had within the UK, and Michel Barnier obviously came out publicly said it's strange the cabinet are agonising over this so much, because actually neither of these are acceptable solutions anyway. But I think you can sort of dismiss that really as a
starting negotiation.
Exactly, a negotiating position. And he's always going to probably say no to anything we offer, which probably leads us on quite nicely to the latest proposal, which apparently the majority of the cabinet are now behind, and that is that the UK remains aligned with some EU rules for a longer period. So at the moment, transitional period is expected to end at the end of 2020. But actually, what this plan considers is maybe that you effectively extend the transitional period in order to allow for a more appropriate arrangement to be formulated during that time. And as the news that has helped the pound so much this week is that there is some form of consensus around that.
Okay, certainly a form of consensus, but not unanimity.
No.
Who are we looking at? The usual suspects, no doubt, in terms of...
Michael Gove rebellion. And Boris Johnson are not in favour of this solution.
As communicated via newspaper columns or Twitter or...
People familiar with the situation.
Okay, yeah. So what is going to be the next course of action then? So let's say they take this to the EU, but we know that the first response would be that sounds a little bit more palatable, doesn't it? That nothing changes and you're just allowed to continue trying to get your proposals together.
it all hinges a lot on a lot of the, to use that old phrase, the devil's in the detail here. So, I mean, the phraseology has been that you remain aligned with some rules for a longer period, but which rules? I mean, whether it's all of them or a smaller subset of them, you know, all of that needs to be determined. And the EU's sort of first stance, as we kind of hinted at earlier, really, it was to say no. They're trying to discuss a solution to a specific problem with Northern Ireland, and they don't really want that. So they say they don't want that to become a way of removing. They don't want it to bias the sort of broader discussions with the UK, with the whole of the UK. So they say they're really looking for a Northern Ireland specific solution. I think in reality, what the market's thinking is this paves the way to what you kind of hinted at there, that actually it's a softer Brexit, a Brexit only in name, that ultimately you could end up with this period extending ad infinitum. And that's certainly something which the proponents of it are keen to rule out. So they say it can't be open-ended. It needs to have a sort of sunset involved in it. But again, and a sunset is exactly one of those things that the EU would be keen not to have, because otherwise you could reach that point. And when you reach that point, you end up exactly where we are now, with no solution to the Irish, to the Northern Irish, excuse me, border situation. So those are the kinds of challenges you're going to get from the EU.
Well, on that basis, then there's no doubt some backbench Tories and frontbench Tories, as you said, Michael Gove, Jacob Rees-Mogg, former podcast guests, who I would imagine would be eyeballing the roadmap for that never-ending transition, and feeling like Theresa May is not the person to lead these negotiations, or sorry, to lead this campaign. What do you think the prospects are of a rebellion, a formal leadership challenge?
Well, there are. It's certainly possible to have a successful leadership challenge, and Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Well, a leadership challenge, first of all. Are we going to have a leadership challenge, first of all? The probabilities associated, not necessarily a successful one.
I mean, what I meant by that is, in order to trigger a challenge to the leadership, the 1922 committee need to receive letters expressing no confidence in the Prime Minister. And you need 15% of MPs, which would be about 37 MPs, to write those letters. And then that would trigger a confidence vote. There are 60 members of Jacob Rees-Mogg's Jacob Rees-Mogg's European Research Group. So we can assume, or at least there were 60 signatories of the last letter by that group. And so we can assume that they're probably not enamoured with this as a solution, and so they would have it within their power, if they wanted, to trigger a confidence vote. I don't think that they will, and the reason is that, firstly, the time. You know, it would take a couple of months to hold a leadership election. And they've only really got 7 months to sort of finalise these negotiations, because ultimately there needs to be this vote by Parliament, which has to take place at around about the end of this year, in advance of the Brexit, which is obviously supposed to take place in March. It's also not actually that wonderful a prospect to be the party leader if you were to go into that for those remaining 7 months. You know, it's actually a very difficult task. And with the current electoral maths, that you're reliant upon the DUP for your majority, and they obviously have considerable interest in this particular issue, it's just not going to get any easier as a task. You've got no chance really of going to the country and trying to secure a new mandate in order to bolster your position, nor would you really want to, given where the polls are at the moment. And so, you know, on that basis, I just don't think that that people are going to want to trigger that election. And if they were to, I also don't think it's necessarily... I think
trigger the challenge.
To trigger the confidence vote, you're quite right. So I don't think you'd want to trigger the confidence vote. And if you trigger the confidence vote, despite everything, I still think there's a pretty high chance that Theresa May would win it, really because of all of those reasons that I've just given.
Okay, so we've got a lower probability associated with a leadership challenge or a no confidence vote, but we know politics can be quite a fluid beast, and therefore it can happen.
Yeah, and if it does happen, the important thing is that if the vote, you have a confidence vote, and if Theresa May loses that, then she is no longer party leader, or there is a leadership election, and she's not in that election. So that's quite a material feature of the of
wow. How it works. If I mean, just trying to nail down some confidence levels, you know, not necessarily to the number or probability, but I mean, is this a 1% chance that we have a leadership election in your mind, or is it a 49% chance? It's not the likely outcome, you know, not a number, but I mean, is it something that keeps you up at night, or indeed excites you?
it's definitely something where you could come in any day and find out that it's happening, but I would have thought it was in the 5 to 10% chance at the moment. The obvious time to have a leadership election to trigger a vote of no confidence would be sometime in the new year, when effectively you've had the vote in Parliament and it's not what you were looking for, but the deadlines have ceased to be as pressing. Therefore, there is time to have a leadership election, to establish a new platform, and then to consider whether you might be able to go on from there and establish a new mandate by having a new general election and improving your negotiating position. So if, for example, the market is right, and if you were to move into some sort of interminable transitional period with no real resolution in sight, then, of course, as a Brexit supporter, or a harder Brexit supporter, I think you might feel there was a good argument for trying to change the leadership with a view to terminating that otherwise interminable period.
So leadership challenge is not really on the agenda until 2019, when the Brexit plan, however finite or open-ended it is, becomes clear, and then we may get a leadership challenge. And you know, what would be, I know it's some distant prospect, but what do you think the sort of the mood of the country is, if you like? I mean, I know capital markets investors do, many quarters of the investment community will have concerns about what a sort of Corbyn type government might do to markets.
I mean, you're getting a little bit ahead of yourself there, because if you were to have a leadership election, then you have to think about what kind of candidate would win it. And I think, so we know that if it's based on a confidence vote, Theresa May wouldn't be in it. And most of the candidates who are, the field is potentially extremely wide, but most of the candidates, and certainly most of the more colourful candidates, certainly from the more sort of Brexiteering kind of side of the party. And remembering how that process works, basically MPs would whittle down the field to just the last two candidates, who would then be subjected to a vote by Conservative Party members. Then we'd probably assume that Conservative Party members would also be more hard Brexit leaning, and so it's difficult to know, obviously. But
so, I thought it was just resolved by those in Parliament, the Tory leadership challenge.
No, so it was, because ultimately you got down to one candidate with Theresa May
Right. Okay.
So there was no. So it never actually went to the members. But ultimately, the way the process is supposed to work is that MPs whittle it down to two candidates, and so you might assume that you had, for the sake of argument, a Savid Javid on one side representing one constituency, and a Michael Gove or someone representing the other side, the other group of MPs, and then they would be voted on by the Conservative Party members. And I would think that in that instance, whoever was representing the Michael Gove type part of the party would be likely to win.
Okay, and so, you've got a Brexit-leaning Tory, or indeed Prime Minister. And then they may feel, therefore, the need to call a general election, because the reason they've triggered the leadership election is because they're unsatisfied with the Brexit strategy. And then you are looking at a
general election. I mean, I think this is why the pound is quite strong, because actually you've got to have the confidence vote. You've got to lose the confidence vote. You've got to have the confidence vote. The Prime Minister has to lose the confidence vote. Then you have to have the election, the leadership election. And then the next test is that the leader, who is probably going to be a bolder and more confident individual than Theresa May, has to feel that it's worth going to the country, like that they've got a chance of winning, and that opportunity is much greater than the potential risk that they could obviously lose in that election, which is not really something that the polls are telling you is going to happen right at the moment.
But don't you have that sort of honeymoon period when you become the new leader? And the reason they would have triggered the leadership election in the first, the vote of no confidence, would have been to change the course that the government had sort of embarked upon.
They would change the path. I mean, the question is whether Brexit would be more popular then, popular enough by that stage to command a majority of to win a large share of the vote at a national level, taking into account the fact that some people will always be Labour and some people will always be Conservative. So I think it's, you know, they're probably going to want to land, take over the reins, and then be quite impressive for a bit, such that they actually, you know, build that that degree of confidence and see that reflected in the polls, to have the confidence to then say, yes, we're going to have an election and we're going to win it.
So something impressive like tackle the burning injustices and get yourself a profile, and then have the confidence to take on an election.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, probably talking about anything other than Brexit would be okay. A good way of doing it.
So, I mean, all of this combined then really paints a lower, much as you said, I was getting ahead of myself, it paints a very low probability of a Corbyn-type government coming into power. And that, like I said, political ideology aside, you know, that's something that capital markets would be a little bit nervous about, one would assume. And therefore, what, you're feeling quite constructive about Sterling? And there's lots of factors that go into the performance of the pound.
I mean, so like the tail risks obviously are to the downside with Sterling, in that we've talked about a sort of 10% chance of a confidence vote. And so that's, you know, and if you were to have one, then that would be very unsettling for the pound. But probably the reason that you're seeing a better performance now is because that risk is diminishing. And also, I think you can assume that it will diminish the further you go on, the less risk you've got of a challenge, because that time is running out. And then up until the point at which you start to look forward to resolution, and then the risk starts rising again. I mean, beyond the political aspects, Sterling's still pretty attractively valued compared to other currencies. It's not screamingly cheap, but it looks all right. It's coming off the back of a fall when May's, this is May the month as opposed to May the Prime Minister, but May's interest rate hike kind of evaporated because economic numbers hadn't been keeping up. I think now still it looks, as we anticipated, as if the weakness of the first quarter was down to the weather, and that actually it will bounce back reasonably well in the in the second quarter. So all of that's quite supportive for the pound.
Okay, then if we conclude then just with some investment commentary, reminding you of a narrative that was long discussed post-Brexit, that sterling weakness that we saw is great for UK equities because all those euros and dollars and Asian currencies translate into more pounds. I mean, what would you say on that basis? Because if sterling's going to be okay, decent, then that's the flip side of that is it would be less good news for UK equities.
Well, I think, you know, that was certainly what we said before. The sterling is a fall in sterling is good for equities because of the translation gains from overseas earnings. However, there are still some more domestically generated UK earnings in the UK equity market than other markets. So if the pound is weak, typically you're actually better off. You'll do reasonably well, all else considered, investing in the UK, but you'll do even better investing overseas. And then you have to think about what the reason for the weakness in the pound is. And if the reason for the weakness in the pound is extreme enough in terms of political anxiety, then it will end up being a very pretty poor investment outcome environment all round. So it won't be very good for equities, it won't be very good for UK bonds. And that's the scenario, I think, with a very left-leaning government that investors would be concerned about. If it starts to look more as if you're going to get a Labour election victory, especially if they were to look like they were going to get a majority, I think that would be very unsettling for the city. And whilst normally I would caution that against thinking that it would be bad for UK bonds, I think in this instance it probably would be quite bad for UK bonds because they've been so explicit about what they would like to do in terms of nationalising industries and spending lots of money.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Guy, for taking us through that political minefield. And there you have it, recorded on Thursday, the 17th of May, that a leadership challenge, the probabilities are low. And I look forward to waking up on Monday, the 21st of May, and seeing that one has indeed been called.
Glad you're not assuming it's going to come on Friday.
Okay, well, thank you to listeners. Let us know what you think on Twitter, referencing hashtag Bruin Podcast. Get in touch or leave a review on iTunes, SoundCloud. Do reach out. Let us know what you think about these podcasts and content. But until next time, many thanks for listening. Thank you.